I think my little metal arc is getting softer and softer. I think he's running out of tweet. Here we are, January 9th, if I'm correct, which I usually am not when I do the dates, January 9th, Wednesday night. And we are going to, I've got some things, I tell you, I cannot wait to take this stuff home and read. Some guy put out there some more stuff against the KJV onlyists and some information on KJV onlyism and answering some questions on how he responds. It's just, these are just amazing. Comparing a 1611 with a 1769. And interesting stuff. But I'll tell you, when you look at 1 Corinthians 13:10 and you see that verse meaning the King James Bible, we know it has to be. It takes care of these contradictions and these conflicts that these guys come up with. So I will probably talk about this thing on Sunday. More stuff for the people. I mean, is it going to do any good? Well, we're going to do it. We're going to talk about it, and we'll know it anyway. So here you are. Welcome to my room on Wednesday night, on a tired school night. And the rest of the school has been dismissed into early release time, I think they have it here. Then they have kids club, and they have stuff in town. And like I say, it's a religious, conservative religious community here. So that's a good thing. I mean, it's not a good thing, but it's a good thing. Could be worse, I suppose. Let's get into another day in the life of Paul. And let's go to chapter 23. It's where we left off the other day, Sunday. And even though I want to kind of scatter around to the different days, this all kind of ties in together here because Paul, remember, these guys told him not to go to Jerusalem. And when he went to Jerusalem, he's had himself a hard time, but he gave his testimony in Jerusalem. Now he's going to go on and give his testimony to a couple more people. And this is a kickoff into his telling people why he's who he is and he's who he is and why and what it is he has to do and how it came about. And you can't get a better rendition of the truth here or whatever than from the guy himself. So, and it's kind of funny because we see in here that Paul sometimes is he's kind of sly. He's a trickster. He's a sly guy. He gets some things going here. He's a tough guy. I mean, you don't mess with him. I mean, he comes back with a pretty good comment. We'll see that in a minute here. But it's funny to read about this guy. To me, I chuckle at these things. So I shouldn't say funny. It's just humorous to see how he handles all the situation he handles. And he knows he's going to get clobbered. He knows he's going to get beaten. He knows he's going to get arrested. He knows all this stuff. He knows it's coming. He just goes out and does his thing. It's just like, remember in Corinthians where Paul says, I would to everybody be as I am or whatever it is. And he's talking about being married or not. He's not talking, he has no other responsibility. He builds, build a tent, you make a tent. And he does what he does. And he just moseys around and talks to people and seems to stir up mud everywhere he goes. But that seems to be how the King James Bible is too. Anywhere that thing is anymore, it just bothers people. So, it's amazing. Anyway, chapter 23. My new glasses are not my new glasses, my repaired glasses are not back yet. So I'm using my old pair here. And not doing the best for reading, so, which is probably why I'm also so tired, is because my eyes are so tired, I guess. I don't know. So here we go. Chapter 23, verse 1. You got your Bibles open there. Internet world out there. And Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, you know, we get so tired sometimes we're not earnest anymore. And we get so frustrated with the news and all this kind of stuff. We lose our earnestlessness, or whatever that word would be. We lose our earnesty. So it's nice to see Paul. I mean, the guy's really had some rough days, and yet he's talking to the council. So he says earnestly, and he's a serious man here, beholding the council, men and brethren. Now let's picture this. I wish I knew what Paul looked like, but we don't. So here he is in front of the council. Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. That's quite a statement. It's such a quite a statement that the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite him on the mouth. Well, this is off to a good start. aren't you, Paul? To tell somebody you lived in good conscience before God until this day? Boy, aren't you kind of a proud little critter? Well, they disliked you so much that Ananias, the high priest Ananias, punched the guy. Come on, hit him in the mouth. He can't say stuff like that. Let's keep in mind Acts 24. We're just down the chapter. We'll get to it here probably Sunday or Monday or whatever, or whatever. But he does say in Acts 24:16 about this conscience of his. He says, "And herein do I exercise myself," 24:16, "herein do I exercise myself to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men." Well, every time he goes and talks to people, they hit him. So he must be offending them. No, he's not offending them. They're being offended. Do you see the difference there? He has a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. And that was a verse I read many years ago, or a number of years ago, or some years ago anyway, about the Ruckman style stuff. And I just realized, you know, that I'm being very offensive toward men on purpose. I mean, it isn't bad enough that the King James Bible offends people. It isn't bad enough that telling people the truth about scriptures and tossing your opinion in with some authority as such. But to actually offend somebody. And when I remember hearing Dr. Ruckman or this, whoever this famous preacher is that draws and lives in Florida, and I heard him say one day, if I haven't offended five people in a sermon, I haven't done my job. Well, it may be true that five people will be offended during your sermon, but if your intent is to offend these people, then that is not the way that Paul wants us to be preaching. In fact, he says in Timothy, we know this, again, nothing new here, never is anymore, we know this stuff. In Timothy, he says here, the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. So to offend somebody who opposes themselves doesn't do a thing for them. I mean, they're already fighting amongst themselves, so if you offend them, you just make them mad, and it doesn't do anything any good. Now, if they choose to get offended, that's their choice. And Paul obviously would know that these people have been offended by things he said, but he's not going out to be offensive. And then void of offense toward God. How do we have a conscience void of offense toward God? Well, that's easy. There's nothing to be offensive. You know, God takes care of that stuff. It's the sin that takes place that we do these things. Does that offend God? No, because he's taking care of it. He's paid the price, so he will not be offended. What about the works you do that are wrong? Well, he's just going to take care of them at the judgment seat. He's not judging them now. He's letting us learn our lessons the hard way. He's letting us do some things that we probably should, you know, he just lets it go. But we know we have a conscience void of offense toward God. Well, what if you purposely go out there and do such and such? Well, it's not imputed, and it's the sin that's in you that's doing it. Romans chapter 7, we know these things. But that offense toward men, again, people will be offended, but we don't need to offend them. But they will be offended. So we should have a conscience void of offense toward men, people. You know, we try to tell them, we try to show them. And poor old Paul, he tried to show people stuff, but he knew he had to show anybody he came around to. So he did, and he went through what he went through, as we're going to read more on here. Yep, there's a couple other verses on conscience, but we'll just leave them alone here. So here's Paul, said what he said, and boom, right off the bat, he gets punched by these people here. "Then said Paul unto him, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall." Wow. "For sittest thou to judge me after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law?" And they that stood by said, "Revilest thou God's high priest?" So Paul just going after the boss right away here. And then they said, "Listen, revilest thou God's high priest? Who do you think you are?" "Then said Paul, I wist not, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people." Okay? I wist not, I think not, brethren, that he was the high priest. So he kind of knocks their boss. For it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. So apparently this guy must not be the ruler of the people because he's really hitting them. But this is where Paul does some of his sly work here. This is called manipulating here. But when Paul perceived that the one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Of the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am called in question. Well, 7. And when he had so said, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. Good move, Paul. Paul comes up with some words, and he divides the crowd right off the bat. Well, when we read this, where Paul says what he says, or God talks to Paul, or whatever takes place in these day-to-day activities that Paul had, just apply this to us today when we look to see what Paul says. That's the King James Bible. Let's talk to people that we've talked with the Lord, and he's talked to me. Well, how do you talk to him? Through prayer, never ceasing. And how does he talk to you? Through a King James Bible. But he won't talk to you unless you open it up and read it. And then you got to read the stuff he's talking to you. And that's what he did when he rose after his death and burial, went to hell, came up, went up, paid the price of the blood to God the Father, Hebrews chapter 9. And then he came, then he's ready. He comes down halfway for the people here. And so he's a smart guy here. And when he had so said, verse 7, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. So Paul divides people. And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were some of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, we find no evil in this man. Whoops, I skipped a verse. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. So Paul knew that he could get arguments started here. It's just like what our kids do to parents. They can put mom and dad against each other in minutes. And Paul knew how to do this to these people. That is pretty sly. That's pretty good. Okay, here. Verse 9, arose a great cry. Verse 9. And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, we find no evil in this man. But if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. And when there arose a great dissension, the chief captain, fearing lest Paul should have been pulled in pieces of them, commanded the soldiers to go down and to take him by force from among them and to bring him into the castle. So even these guys are protecting Paul. Rough stuff, rough situations, Okay, verse 11. And I like that, let us not fight against God. Well, you fight against what Paul writes in the King James Bible, you're fighting against God. Okay, so here we go, verse 11. This is a good verse for what's going through here. And the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. Oh, really? Come on, Lord, I have to go through this all over again in Rome? Yeah, not only that, you got to walk to Rome to get there. No Amtrak or anything. Okay. So, see, here's the verse that says, if I didn't want Paul to go to these places, why am I saying what I'm saying here? 12. And when it was dry, when it was day, remember, bad glasses here. And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. And I'll say to people that conspiracy still exists. There are people that will get on the internet and they'll come to our room, they'll do everything they can to destroy Paul in our lives or in somebody else's life out there. They'll do anything when you talk to people, anything they can to destroy you saying what you want to say to people. These guys have a conspiracy against him. They're actually out to get him. Are there people out to get you? I believe there might be. I really do. Why? King James Bible. Well, that's not so bad. I know rightly divided. I know that's not so bad. It's getting tougher. Right and divided according to Paul. Yeah, you're getting really picky now. And Paul says, my teacher of this kind of stuff. Well, now there's your disaster right there. You can't do this. You got to get out of that, Dad, kind of thing here. Okay, so we're at verse 8 probably, 9 probably, 10 probably, 10. No, we did 10, 11. And the night following the Lord, we did 12 too. No, we did yet. Be of good cheer, Paul, for thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. The Lord was pleased by this stuff that he was doing. Be of good cheer, Paul, now you got to go do it again. And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded... Oh, I'm way behind myself, aren't I here? Sorry, I'm just tired. Oh, am I tired tonight. And they were more than 40 which had made this conspiracy. Now, we're talking about the conspiracy, aren't we? They're saying they would not eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. Boy, I tell you, that is one... That's hate crime. 14. And when they came to the chief priests and elders and said, we have bound ourselves under a great curse that we will eat nothing until we have slain Paul. These guys are serious, hateful people. Now therefore, ye with the council signify to the chief captain that he bring down unto you tomorrow, as though ye would inquire something more perfectly concerning him. There's that more perfectly again, see? And we, or ever he come near, are ready to kill him. Whoa, little sneak meeting going on here. And when Paul's sister's son, so Paul has a sister, can you imagine being Paul's sister? You know, Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait. He went and entered into the castle and told Paul. Then Paul called one of the centurions unto him and said, bring this young man unto the chief captain, for he hath a certain thing to tell him. So he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, Paul the prisoner called me unto him and prayed me to this young man unto thee, who hath something to say unto thee. Boy, I can't even read. I'm so tired here. Sorry. Then the chief captain took him. I skip a verse. Ugh. So he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, Paul the prisoner called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto thee, who hath something to say unto thee. Then the chief captain took him by the hand and went with him aside privately and asked him, what is it thou hast to tell me? And he said, the Jews have agreed to desire thee that thou wouldst bring down Paul tomorrow unto the council, as though they would inquire somewhat of him more perfectly. I like that phrase, more perfectly, see? But do not thou yield unto them, for therein lie in wait of him more than 40 men, which have bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now are they ready, looking for a promise from thee. Little snitch, but that's turned out to be a good one there. So the chief captain then lets a young man depart, and charge him, see thou tell no man what thou hast showed these things to me. And he called unto him 2 centurions, saying, make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70, and spearmen 200, and the third hour of the right night, and provide them boats that they may set Paul on, and bring him safe, and Felix the governor. And he wrote a letter after this manner. Okay, so here we go. See all the stuff that's going on? This is a great story. Claudius Lysias unto the most excellent governor Felix sendeth greeting. Okay. This man is taken of the Jews and should have killed all of them, should have been killed of them. Then came I with an army and rescued him, having understood he was a Roman. And when I would have known the cause wherefore they accused him, I brought him forth into their council. When I perceived to be accused of questions of their law, but to have nothing to do with this charge worthy of death or of bonds. And when it was old, and when it was told, I tell you, my eyes are ready to shut and be done. I'm probably making you sleepy now, saying that kind of stuff here. And when it was told me how that the Jews laid wait for the man, I sent straightway to thee and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before thee what they had against him. Farewell. There's the letter. So, you know, these people that make these accusations, like I'm going to read this stuff tonight by this guy and we'll talk about it Sunday. These are accusations. Well, they don't say anything. They really don't. Same thing here. 31. Then the soldiers, as it was commanded them, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. On the morrow, they left the horsemen to go with him and return to the castle. Who, when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before him. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province he was. And he understood that he was of Cilicia. I will hear thee, said he, when thine accusers are also come, and be commanded. And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. Well, that's a hot spot. Herod's judgment hall. Okay, so there's some time. Poor guy, he's just had some rough times, isn't he? Just punched out, you know, because he says he lives in good conscience, and he talked to the Lord in verse 11. Don't we hear from the Lord in verse 11 ourselves? We don't have to hear from him directly. We hear from him in the Bible. So the parallel with Paul and the parallel with us, to me, is very interesting. It's just fun to talk about. But I'm going to bag it here tonight. It's Wednesday night. I mean, I can barely stay awake. I think it's, I don't know what it is. So, you guys got your 30-minute sermon out of this thing. I think, only 22 minutes is all we got on this thing. From what I can tell. Boy, I'm sorry. That's just, Mark, you want to take over or whatever, you know? You got something you want to do, go for it, folks. I'm going to shut down my little thing, get her loaded up, get her online, and that's a good start of chapter 23. And, yeah, just go to bed.